Welcome to the latest edition of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. Our latest guest is Livingston's Derek White, as he took Chris Sampson and I through life at the club. It's been quite a journey for the West Lothian club over the past 5 years, as they've bounced back from relegation to League One to successive top six finishes in the Premiership, and more recently, an appearance in the League Cup final. I found this a very interesting chat, and if you're a Livingston fan listening, or indeed a Scottish football coach, I recommend you go and give our sister podcast, the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, a listen. One of their more recent podcasts was with Livingston star Nicky Devlin. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Scottish FA's Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson and I'm with Michael Bokel today. How are we, Michael?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Not too bad. We are also joined by Derek White today, who is Club Secretary and Media Officer at Livingston. Hi, Derek.
Hi, guys. How's it doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, all good, all good.
Good stuff. Well, as you've spotted, Derek works at Livingston, and we're going in-depth on everything about Livy today on today's podcast. So let's just get cracked right into it. Derek, give us an introduction to you and your current role at Livy.
Yeah, so obviously, Derek, I've been at Livingston for probably a number of years now, in different varieties. So I'll probably start with the role that I'm in just now, or roles that I'm in just now. Chris asked me before we came on the podcast what my official job title is, and I wasn't actually 100% sure, but I probably cover off right now club secretary duties, media officer duties, and I look after some of the ticket and stuff that we do here at Livingston as well. So it's probably a fully inclusive role, and I think that just sums up Livingston. But as I said, I've been involved in Livingston for a while. I was part of the youth academy from probably the age of five all the way up to reserve football. So I played reserve football here at Livingston, and that's kind of how I got involved here. And it's just kind of snowballed from then at a very quick pace, but it's been good.
Yeah, well, you kind of alluded to it there, but how has the role since you got involved from the kind of off the pitch side, shall we say, how's that evolved over time?
Yeah, so as I say, it all started when I was kind of involved as a player, and I think the young players on a match day, they used to come in and volunteer and help out, and whether that would be helping out at turnstiles or whatever it may be. And I think I kind of landed the role of looking after the match day mascots, so kind of the kids that had paid money, they get a tour of the stadium, got a kick about in the park, and I kind of looked after them, and that's where it all started. That was a volunteer gig, and I think Livingston, everyone who kind of knows a wee bit about the club, it's a club that once you do something and you're okay at it, you'll get landed with more and more responsibility because you know you can be trusted, and that's just the way it is. So I think it kind of went from looking after match day mascots to helping with other various roles on a match day. And then I think probably the first official role I had was supporters liaison officer, which would have been couple of years ago now, and again it was a volunteer role. It was just a role that they currently didn't have somebody in place to do, and they thought I would be a good fit. I was coaching in the community. I knew quite a few of the parents who brought their kids to the sessions that I ran, so they thought it'd be a good role for me to kind of jump into. And from there, it's kind of just snowballed on, and I'll probably touch on it in a wee bit more depth. But as I say now, I'm covering media officer role, I'm covering club secretary role, and I'm covering ticketing. But well, I presume we'll come on to that as we kind of go through the podcast.
And just in case you're not giving yourself enough to do, Derek, you're also studying at the moment in time, aren't you? How's that going?
Aye, so just to make sure I'm 100% keeping myself busy, I'm currently studying at University of Edinburgh, and I'm actually studying, which is probably a bit of a shock to some people who only know me through my role at Livingston, but I'm studying applied sports science. So that's probably another aspect of the footballing industry that I'm ticking off the boxes for. But the story behind that is when I applied for university, I was, 16, 17, leaving school. And I was doing a lot of football coaching with West Lothian Youth Foundation, which are charitable partners here at the football club. So I thought sports science would go hand in hand well with the coaching role. And I thought that's where I wanted my life to go. That's where I wanted my career to go. But obviously now, kind of, over the 4 years that I've been at uni, I'll hopefully be graduating in the summer, touch wood on that basis. But it's obviously became apparent to me that the coaching and the sports science side of things isn't quite where I want my career to go. And I've kind of more transitioned what I would call it, the business off-field side of the football, which is where I want to go. But I think having a degree on the CV, and I think university is about so much more than just the content you learn. It's about the skills that you gain. So hopefully in a couple of months' time, I'll be graduated with an honours degree in applied sports science.
You talk then a little bit about behind the scenes at the club, and you know how the it seems to be a very close-knit club, if you like, and I think that's evident in terms of the different roles you've been doing then. How important is that in terms of the success the club has had as well?
Yeah, I think it's massive. I've always said to people, we at Livingston, we know what we are, and I mean that in a good way. We know that we're not a massive club. We know what our supporter base is, and we know who they are. You probably know most Livingston fans if you're a Livingston fan, but I think we want to, the close-knit of the staff has been hugely important to our success, because I think if you've got big departments, it takes a little bit longer for things to get through. You maybe don't necessarily know people in depth, but trust me when I say that every staff member that's involved in Livingston, both on the park and off the park, know everyone very, very well. And I think it just helps the whole atmosphere of the football club. You often see players talking about the changing room, but it's not just the changing room that's a really good atmosphere. It's the full football club, whether that's the office staff, whether that's myself, whether that's the first team staff, whoever it may be. Everyone knows everyone and everyone has a laugh and a joke. And I think we need that. We need to be unique. I think it's how we attract staff members. It's how we attract players, because we are that little bit unique. And we're all genuinely friends. And I'm not just saying that because this is a podcast interview. We're all genuinely friends. We all genuinely like each other. And I think when you're working alongside people that you would class as friends, it makes you want to do that little bit better. So for me, for example, my work isn't necessarily going to get us 3 points on a Saturday, but I know fine well that my work can make it a little bit easier, can make it easier for the players, can make it easier for the staff to go and get 3 points. And I think when you know that people rely on you, people trust you, and your friends are in the workplace, then you try that a little bit harder. So I think the close-knit of the players, the first team staff, and the off-field staff has been hugely important in the success that we've seen over the past couple of years.
And how is it developed behind the scenes then? Because obviously, I know it's much talked about in terms of Livy were playing League One football not that long ago, and be another top six finish secured. So how crazy has that time been, and how much has the club developed behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's developed massively, I think. And just to take it all the way back to that 2015-16 season when we were relegated to League One, we were teetering on the edge of going part-time. And I think our chief executive had done an interview not too long ago in the build-up to the cup final, I think, saying that us staying full-time has probably got us to where we're at. You know, if we dropped down to that part-time status when we got relegated to League One, would we be sitting with consecutive top six finishes in the Premiership? I highly doubt it. And I think that League One season, getting promoted to the Championship, between League One and the Championship, and this is obviously just in our case, there wasn't that much of a jump because we were used to being a Championship club, but the aims were almost to solidify ourselves as a Championship club. We didn't want to become a yo-yo club between the Championship and League One, so we wanted to solidify ourselves as a Championship club. So the work we had to do off the field for that Championship season was really minimal, because in the grand scheme of things, the club was a Championship club. But that season, getting promoted to the Premiership, and especially with it being through the playoffs, that was a crazy month or so, because I think the playoffs were the 20th of May, I think. I hope I've got that date right, or I'll be getting slaughtered off some Livy fans. But, you know, we didn't know until the end of May that we were being promoted. So we were already behind the curve in the sense of what we could do. And I think, you know, you had Betfred Cup starting in mid-July. So you had a month or so to get things in place. We had two stands. The stands behind the goals weren't fit for purpose, probably, because they'd never been needed. We were just in League One. You were luckily if we were getting 1,000 people at games, you know. So the two stands behind the goal weren't fit for purpose. So that was probably our main port of call, was to get them up to speed, because if we couldn't get them up to speed, then we couldn't get people in these stands and we couldn't make ticket revenue from that. And then I think the next big job that we had was we got on board with Ticketmaster. Because in League One, I'm sure you guys will know better than me as well, that in League One, it's all just cash turnstiles. It's nice and easy. We were probably lucky if we were getting 1,000 people here in League One, maybe even the Championship, still cash turnstiles. And at that point in time, we knew we were going to have sellouts here. We knew fine well we would have 10,000 against Celtic or Rangers. We knew we'd have 5,000-6,000 against Hibs, Hearts, Aberdeens. We needed a ticketing system, a proper ticketing system, not cash turnstiles or anything like that. So that was the next big job, because Ticketmaster is a 12-week turnaround for them implementing new systems. So that's 3 months. We didn't have 3 months. We had a month and a half, 2 months if we were lucky. So the way we've progressed over the past couple of years off the field has been monumental, to be honest with you. We've implemented, we've got the two new stands up to speed. We implemented Ticketmaster. We improved the media seating with new plugs. So it all sounds very boring, but in the grand scheme of things, it was things that needed done. And I think last season we installed a brand new media room, so like a proper press conference room with a podium and almost like an audience space for the media. Unluckily, we've not had a lot of time to use it because COVID hit. But the way this club's transformed, with the changing rooms, ice baths, we've built a new gym area for the players. There's been so much going on behind the scenes that it's actually really hard to summarise it all in a podcast interview without actually having to sit down and remember everything that's been done over the past couple of years off the field.
Derek, even like from that perspective, obviously it has been a very exciting kind of last couple of years for you and for the club. You're a lifelong Livingston fan as well. Do you feel like you're able to keep the emotions in check at all times when it comes to things to do with your role?
Aye, so this is actually quite an interesting question, I think. At the start, when I started to get that little bit more involved and I was a wee bit more immersive in the role, I did struggle. Like, I'll be honest, there's no point in me coming on here and pretending that it was easy to keep my emotions in check. It was tough. But I think the hardest part wasn't necessarily about keeping my emotions in check in the sense of if the team played bad, wanting to go onto Twitter and tweet something about it or anything like that. I think I was relatively okay at doing that because, as I says, you speak to the players every day, so regardless if they were terrible on Saturday, I wouldn't feel the need to go on Twitter or complain about it because I knew them. I knew them personally. What I found hard was, I think, when people, either Livingston supporters or just general football fans, criticised the club in an off-field sense, I actually found that much harder than them criticising the team. I think people criticising football teams is part of the norm. Whether you like it or not, it is. What I found hard was to see people criticising the off-field stuff that the club were doing, because I think until you properly understand how much this club has done over the past couple of years off the field with such a small team, you probably fail to appreciate it. So when you see people saying, oh, why are they doing this? Why are they not doing that? Originally, it was really hard for me because I knew how hard everyone was working in this building. I knew how hard everyone was working. So to see that work kind of being complained about on Twitter, it was tough. But I mean, like everything, I've kind of learned over the past year or two that in football, regardless of what you do, people aren't going to be happy. And I think I've kind of came to terms with that. So don't get me wrong, it was tough to start with. And as I say, it was tough to keep my emotions in check when I actually seen off-field stuff getting criticised, because I knew that we were trying. And I think that we're comfortable. I'll probably say this multiple times on the podcast, but we know what we are and we know where we're at. So we're not daft. So when people say, oh, why aren't yous doing that? It's a case of, well, we know it's on the checklist, but we had to prioritise. As I say, we came into this premiership with two stands that weren't even suitable for purpose. So we had to prioritise in terms of structural things that need done to the stadium, and then we can start working at the off-field things. And I think over the past season or two, and we'll get onto this, you've seen that we've made small additions, and they are small additions, and we know that, but we're constantly making small additions to try and improve our off-field operations.
I completely hear you on the, you know, when you see, especially on social, people slating the team or whatever else, you can detach yourself from that to an extent, but I completely get what you're saying about it's hard. You have to adapt your own thinking and how you read things, and you go try not to separate it from being personal and not personal. Is your experience then as within that sort of maybe SLO area as well helped with the fan communication, and how important do you see the roles of SLOs as a whole within Scottish football?
Yeah, I think they're massive. And when I first got put, I'm probably a unique unique individual in the sense of the SLO role, because I think my other roles at the club transitioned really, really quickly. But for that period where I was just the SLO, then I think it was massive, you know. And I think, especially at a club like Livingston, it's really easy to build relationships with supporters because you know most of them, you know, by either going to away games, going to home games, you know a lot of them. So it's really, really easy to build relationships with them. And I think those relationships are massively important. And I think that just kind of emphasises how important the SLO roles are. While I feel that potentially they're still underutilised and maybe underappreciated by some people, I do think they're hugely important. And I think for some clubs, and listen, I'm including Livingston in this as well, I think that clubs could utilise SLOs a wee bit more. I think some clubs use them as put some information out about the game, answer some questions about fans coming to the stadium, job done, job's a good one. But I think there's so much more there. And I think as I'm talking about and the behind the scenes work, I think that the SLO could be so important in that, and saying, here's what's happening, here's what's on the agenda for still being done, and here's the people that are doing it. So I think it's really important that fans get a real good sense of how a club operates, because it's really, really tough when you see a lot of negative comments that don't actually make sense, if you know what I mean, because people don't understand how the club operates. And I think that's where SLO roles could be vital and could be used so much more, in the sense of getting how the club operate out to supporters and letting people understand these things. But as I say, I'm probably a little bit unique that my other roles transitioned that quickly, that I probably didn't get a good enough chunk of time to actually grow into the SLO role as much as I wanted to. And again, I still get contacted now and I still help people now, but I think we are certainly one of the clubs that could utilise the SLO role a lot more. But they are hugely important.
I think just the way you look at them, like across Europe as well, I think probably Denmark, I might be wrong there, but the clubs in Denmark, they use them so well, and they seem to be like just part of the club and part of the fans, like in a seamless way. I think the fans definitely see that, and whether that's the best practice for it, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think that there's definitely scope for them to be much more a part of Scottish football. I agree with you there.
Yeah, definitely. And as I say, I think, as you touched on there, sorry, that they can be a part of the club, but being a part of the fans is just as important. And I think it's probably a unique role in it. I do get that it's probably hard to balance, because if you're working at the club, then you probably got ties to the club. And if you're with the fans, you probably got ties to the fans. And I think the SLO role, while needs to be really independent, I can understand why people maybe struggle with it, in the sense of if anything negative happens, how they deal with it, etc. So it's a tough role. It's certainly not an easy role for anyone, but it is one that is hugely important.
Derek, you've touched on kind of having to prioritise when Livy first got promoted back to the Scottish Premiership. I think with some of the stuff that you've been mentioning already, we can probably class you as one of the busiest people in Scottish football. How do you continue to prioritise what you yourself focuses on in your role, and then the club as a whole as well?
You know, I think, like all these things, if you do something so often, it often becomes just the norm, if that makes sense. So I've been juggling a couple of roles and studying for a couple of years now, so it almost becomes the norm. But for me, what's hugely important is there's certain things in my roles that don't change regardless of what happens. For example, press conferences and notifying press of things, these don't change. You know, we have the same time for press conference all the time, so things like that take care of itself, you know. And I think when things do crop up, I do need to sit back and think, right, what's happening first? Do you know what I mean? What do I need an outcome on first? And that's really how I prioritise. You know, I've probably the same tricks of the trade that everyone else has. I've got the messiest notepad next to my laptop that you'll ever see, because it's all a scribble on. But for me, I do things in chronological order, and some people maybe get a little bit impatient with me at times because I put their priority, or what they feel is their priority. And I think that's one of the big things when I'm prioritising, is that letting people know, because, you know, whatever people come to me for, that is their main priority. Whether it's my main priority or not, that's a different outcome. But for me, I need to prioritise the things that I need outcomes on. So if I've got something that I need a decision on by Friday, I'll prioritise it because I need that. If I've got something that can wait till next week, I can wait. It's really hard for me to put into words how I prioritise. I think I ultimately take all the information in, write all my, I will miss that to-do list, and whatever needs done first or what I think is most important in my head, I go with. Whether what I think is most important is actually most important, you know, some people will probably debate that. But for me, I'll trust my own judgment.
One of the things that I definitely spotted recently as well from you was the run-up to the Betfred Cup final. Obviously, very exciting. But what did you prioritise in the run-up to that final as well?
Aye, that was an interesting 2 weeks. That was probably the busiest 2 weeks in the media sense that we had. So I think the most important thing for me, probably 3-4 weeks before the final, maybe not that long, 3 weeks before the final, I picked the three players that I wanted to do press. So we had obviously the press conference, the media day. I picked the three players that I wanted, which was, who was it now? Marvin Bartley, Jason Holt and Nicky Devlin. So I earmarked day three and all I done was took them off all other media duties because ultimately I wanted the first time that they'd spoken a few weeks to be about the final. I wanted it to be about a big deal. So once I'd picked day three, I then knew what other players I had. We scheduled in the media day for the Tuesday. So we had the press conferences, we had the trophy here, we had photographers here, all that kind of thing. Because for me, what was important in the build-up to that was that we'd done it all in the one day and got it out the way. So the players knew that that was the media day, that was what was happening. So I prioritised day three, took them off all of their media stuff, and then from there, you know, I dealt with every request as it came in. I mean, I don't know if you maybe seen on my Twitter or on LinkedIn, we had a lot of requests and we had a lot of media activity in that week or two building up to it. And I think for me, and whether this is a right or wrong way to do it, listen, everyone will do it differently, but I prioritised A, people who covered us before the final. And I think that that's always something that I keep in mind is people who were interested in us before we were in a National Cup final and they got what they wanted and they got the players they wanted. And then from there, it's just a case of dealing with every request as it came in. I had a spreadsheet set up and you just got to prioritise what I felt was the best interviews for people. And that's what I say is that this is where it comes down to my judgment, you know, whether I think doing a BBC interview or doing a Sky Sports interview, whatever is best, then that's what we go with. But we got tremendous coverage in the build-up to that cup final.
How important is that? Sorry, Chris, I was just going to ask, how important is that press coverage for the club and why does it mean so much to the club?
You know, I think it means a lot, and this is maybe just to me, because from where we were, you know, and I know I tweeted this the other day, but I know the look where we were 5 years ago or whatever narrative will maybe be a bit boring for people. But as I tweeted, I think for me, it's still relevant. And while we continue to progress as a football club, it always will be relevant. But, you know, in League One, the media coverage of these leagues, and listen, yous will be bigger advocates for stuff like that than me, but it's not great, you know, it's not great at all. So I think for us, we know what we are, and little Livingston to be getting the coverage we are is hugely important, and it puts us on the map again. You know, I think everyone knows about the glory days of Livingston when they were first in the Premiership and they won the 2004 Cup final and they were in Europe and things like that. And for us, the more coverage we get as a football club, the better it is for us because it puts us on the map again. It gets people talking about Livingston. And I am a very big believer to a certain extent that no coverage is bad coverage. And for us to be on, and this might sound daft coming from a Premiership football club, but when it's us, I think it's relevant for us to be on ITV News, for us to be on Sky Sports News, for us to be get all these interviews in the build-up to the cup final. It was massive. It was a big occasion. Yes, we didn't get the result we wanted, but in hindsight, you know, that build-up was hugely important for us to put us on the map, put our players on the map, and get people talking about Livingston Football Club again.
Derek, how exciting was it from a personal perspective in the build-up to that Betfred Cup final? And then how disappointing was it not to grab the win? And Michael, maybe you can come in after, because I feel like it's probably quite similar for you whenever Scotland play a match as well. It kind of feels like a cup final just because they're not as regular as league matches. But Derek, talk us through the excitement.
It was probably one of the most exciting points that I've certainly experienced. You know, I think when we got promoted to the Premiership, I wasn't as heavily involved. So I was more just a supporter at that point. But to be involved in the football club and be organising things, it was amazing. It really was amazing. And I think for me, it almost didn't feel real. You know, I was scheduling in these interviews and press coverages and photo calls and all that kind of thing, but up until they happen, they're just emails. They're just emails, you know. So until that first player sat down for the first interview, and then even just sitting listening to the players' interviews, them talking about how much it would mean to them and how much it would mean to the manager and all that kind of stuff, it was hugely exciting. But I think the day that it really sunk in that we were in a National Cup final was the Tuesday before the final. We had our media day, and yeah, we had the press conferences, but listen, you're used to players talking in press conferences. It's not that exciting. But for me, what the huge thing was the three videos that we put together as a football club. I think we had Burton O'Brien in talking about the 2004 Cup final. We had some supporters in talking about what it would mean. And that's really when it hit home. I think the supporters that we had in, just for the record, were tremendous. And I think the way they put across their feelings were amazing. But that's when it really hit home how exciting this was, hearing people talk about it. The week building up to the final, all it was filled with was group chats that I'm in talking about the final, seeing people on social media talking about the final. It was amazing. And then obviously the day of the final, I was surprisingly calm. You know, you always get messages, oh, how nervous are you? And I was calm. And I remember saying to Kirsten Robertson, who's head of football operations at St Johnstone on the day, I says, listen, I'm relatively chilled out about things, because regardless of what I do, and people might laugh, but whether I had a great day at the final and done my job brilliantly, or whether I done my job terribly, it wasn't getting us the trophy. Do you know what I mean? So nothing I could do could affect that. So I thought to myself, there's no point in me getting worked up about it. I'll enjoy the day, and what will be will be. And obviously, it wasn't to be for us. And I think the most disappointing thing from the cup final was that I don't think we really showed what we were capable of as a team. And I think, I'm not speaking out of turn there, I think if you speak to any of the players, they would say the same thing, and they have said the same thing in subsequent interviews, that's the most frustrating thing, that we could have put on such a better performance. You know, if we come off there knowing that we'd given 110% and still got beat, you can probably take it. But coming off there knowing that we maybe didn't perform at the levels that we could have, I think that was the most disappointing thing about the cup final.
Michael, do you feel the same from a Scotland perspective?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that I'm hearing Derek say, and I'm thinking to myself, no, completely get that. I think that, you know, we've spoken about it on the podcast before, is knowing that, you know, being in a privileged position, especially with Scotland, when doing content or part of media operations, from my end supporting that, but it's always something that, as Derek says, you can't control what happens on the pitch, but you can definitely have a say in the narrative before the games. And I think we did a whole podcast on qualification around Scotland and what that meant and how we approached it and what that is. And yeah, look, I still get excited for Scotland games, and during the whole international week, and we've got, as we record this, we've got one coming up soon, and I just can't wait for the game to be played, actually, because then that's when everything's not in my control. And you know, it's hard with Scotland, as Derek says, with the cup final, WhatsApp groups were lighting up, and I think with Scotland international, everybody's, or most people are talking about it in terms of, because everybody's supporting the same team, and it's how you harness that a little bit. It's how you separate yourself professionally from it, as well as the game. But I enjoy watching Scotland games, and that's where, as I said, you're not in control of that, so you can enjoy it as a fan a little bit while doing your job, but it's a positive result makes a hell of a difference.
I think if I can jump back in there, I think one thing Michael just said there kind of resonated with what we tried to do with the cup final coverage is, Michael says that when the game kicks off, he can't control that. But I think on the flip side of that, and the week building up to it, that's where people like Michael and probably myself, we can control the narrative. And I think there was a lot of comparisons between what we were doing and what St Johnstone were doing. And I think St Johnstone done a lot. I think St Johnstone done a lot, probably more than what we did. And this isn't about us saying what they done was better, what we done was better. But I think from our point of view, what we wanted to do is we wanted to do something that meant something to supporters. I think we could have easily thrown together some training montages of the players training. We could have easily done some competitions. We could have easily done interviews with the players. But you can do that any week. We wanted to make something special. And I think that the main video for us was the one with the supporters that was 7 or 8 minutes long. Now, I know, and Chris, I seen your feedback that it was maybe a bit too long for you, which I get. But for us, and this is me being honest, we weren't targeting football fans in general. We were targeting Livingston fans. And I think that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to do something meaningful that, in hindsight, if we'd went on and won the cup final, I think fans would have went back and watched that video and it would have went even more to them. And I think that's what we based our coverage on, is we thought that we'd go for quality. And by the way, I'm not saying that what St Johnstone didn't do wasn't of good quality, because it is. It was really good. But we thought we'll tone it back on just pushing stuff every single day, and we'll try and make one statement piece. And I think from the three videos that we made, it's the most views we've ever had on social media across kind of like, I don't know what you would call it, a set of videos that we'd made. So that's what we done, and that's why we felt it's so important to do something meaningful that would resonate and that would connect the supporters with the football club.
I think that's an important point to highlight there, in terms of, you knew you had a plan on what you wanted to do, you had an audience in mind of who you were going to be talking to, that, and you stuck to it. And you know, it's easy to get caught up in with loads of ideas, but to have that clear understanding of, we're doing this for our fans and the content. You know, I always say to my team is that I don't get caught up in trying to make a video very short if the audience, we know the audience is going to want it long. Or you just, if it's a good video or a good bit of content you're reading, you don't worry about the length of it. You just go, you get so engrossed in it. And I think you're right, Derek, in terms of your video, whether it's 7 or 8 minutes, the fans obviously lapped that up, and it's absolute fair play to you.
No, of course. And I think, and this is what I'll go back to, we know what we are as Livingston Football Club. We know our supporter base. We know that we've got a smaller supporter base than most clubs, but we're comfortable with that. And everything we do is to look after those loyal supporters. And I think, just I'll touch on it quite briefly because it's probably a hot topic, but in terms of pay-per-view, at the start of the season, we were criticised heavily for making our pay-per-view £20. And I get that. People think that's expensive. But when you drill down into the reasoning as to why we done it to protect the value of season tickets. Our season tickets work out at roughly £17 something per game. So let's be honest here. We need to look after our season ticket holders here at Livingston Football Club. Because there isn't thousands and thousands of them, the ones that we do have mean even more. So I think if we were to make pay-per-view £10, then for our supporters, where's the value in buying a season ticket? There probably isn't any. So I guess that I'm just trying to give you a snapshot as to what we do as a football club and how we try and approach things. And we always need to make sure that we are looking after our own, if that makes sense.
Have you found that pay-per-view experience this season, Dirk?
Hi, it's been an interesting one. As I say, at the start of the season, we were probably unique. I think it was only us and Hamilton who didn't have kind of like the TV platform sites at all. I think I'm right in saying that, but we were certainly one of the only ones who didn't have it at all. So we really started from scratch. And while it was something that we were looking at, this certainly accelerated the process. So it was an interesting summer where we had to get everything on board. And as I say, when we were going through the process of pay-per-view and how much we were going to cost, that was our thinking. So I've kind of gave our reasoning for the thinking. And we have been heavily criticised for it, and we'll still get people that criticise it for us. But at the end of the day, we've protected the value of our season ticket holders, and we've looked after our season ticket holders. So that's the main thing for us. But the pay-per-view in general, from an operational perspective, there was teething problems at the start. I think all football clubs experienced teething problems, which was frustrating. But in hindsight, was it predictable? Probably. To be fair to the streaming company and to the broadcasters, etc., no one had ever done this before. So for us to expect that they could stream, you know, 12 clubs at the same time and all that kind of thing with no technical issues at all was probably a bit in dreamland. But, you know, I think as the seasons went on, there has certainly been improvements. And the one good thing for me that's came out of all of it is it's probably brought, this might sound daft, but it's probably brought media departments of separate clubs a bit closer together, because we've had to have constant dialogue. And I think right now, from my perspective, we're in a good place, both Livingston and all clubs, in terms of pay-per-view and streaming. I think most weeks, certainly in the Premiership, I'm not going to speak for below that, but most weeks in the Premiership, streams run smoothly and operationally okay. So from our point of view, it's been good.
I would have loved a centralized streaming product, but maybe that's just me there. Maybe that was your answer for one of the questions later on we're going to ask you, but maybe we could wait for that one, Derek. I wanted to ask you about when you were talking about the build up to the Betfred final. Obviously, you mentioned video, and that's definitely something that I've noticed this season. You've introduced the kind of summary videos post match from BAC Photo and Film. I think hopefully he's got a name, and you'll be able to bring that in. I just spotted his Twitter handle. But what's the thinking behind that? Why have the club started to do that?
Yeah, so as you say, BAC Photo and Film. The guy's name is Blair Coburn, It's quite an interesting story how he got involved. A few seasons ago, there was an aerial image of the stadium that was taken from a drone that appeared, and it was at night, floodlights were on, it looked really, really good. So during the summer period, we were putting together a new mural for one of the walls in the stadium, and we were going to use that photo, but we realised it was from when we had a grass park. The grass park looked terrible. So it's one of the things, we went on the hunt to find who took the photo, and it was Blair. It was Blair Coburn that took it. So we messaged Blair saying, this is our thinking, this is our logic. Any chance you could pop to the stadium and get a new updated version? So he came down, took some aerial footage of the stadium so we could put it on the wall, and that was the end of it. And then one night our photographer called off, and I was like, I wonder if Blair could do it. So gave Blair a phone and he says, no, I'm busy, but if you need me, this is a midweek game. He says, I'm busy during the week, but if you need me at the weekend, let me know. So he actually originally only came in to cover a photographer who was off ill. And from there, after we had covered a couple of games photography-wise for us, he says, sent me an email saying, listen, like, I do X, Y, and Z. I can do video. I can do this. I don't know if the club would be interested, but it would be good to have a conversation. So we had a conversation with Blair, and he's a Livingston fan, so he understands the football club, and that's what's important for us, is people understand what we're about and who we are. And from there, it just kind of went from there. And the thinking behind it for us is, we know where we're at. We know fine well, and Chris, I said this to you when you asked about me coming on the podcast, we know fine well we don't do as much as other people do, and we're okay with that. We're not bothered. We're not constantly sitting frustrated because more people are doing better things than we are, but we want to try and improve, and we always do want to try and improve, and we will always look at areas that we can get better in. And I think when you've got a Livingston fan who says he's willing to come and help us and can do X, Y, and Z, then for us to turn that down would be daft. So from our point of view, it's another aspect that we've improved in. And he's doing the summary matches, the summary videos after the matches, but he also done the build up to the Betfred Cup final stuff. And kind of as it progresses and next season, we hope to probably enhance that relationship a little bit better, and things that Blair can do for us, because it's massive and it's another avenue that we are continually striving to improve.
I personally love it, to be honest with you. Like, I think it just shows match day in a completely different light. I guess it's not unique, and again, you mentioned that there is other clubs out there that are doing things that are much more than what Livy are doing, but I really love this approach, because I just think it just shows it, and like, especially as well at the moment when fans aren't in the stadium, and you've got fans that are watching at home. It's not a very exciting experience. I'm just going to put that out there, because I've been experiencing it all season so far. But when you see that different touch and that different kind of way of looking at the match that you've maybe just watched, like, you spot more things. You see parts of the stadium that you've not seen for so long as well. And I just really love it. Like, I think Hearts is as well this season have been great. I think it's Jalen and Films that have been doing theirs, and they particularly did one when Hearts came to Capello earlier on this season, and I think I've watched that so many times, I've got it on my bookmarks on Twitter, even though we lost that match 1-0, just because, like, you see parts of Capello that just look so, obviously because it's Capello, so run down and decrepit, but you just love them, and it just makes you miss it a little bit more.
No, definitely. And I think, as I say, that's what's important for us, is to continually try and improve these things. And I think there's a common theme here that we get people involved who understand the football club and who appreciate the football club. You know, we've got, I need to probably give a shout out to the two commentators, one Callum Brown, who commentates for us in LFC Live, who's just a journalism student, but he's a Livingston fan. So we are always keen in finding people who have skills that we necessarily don't already have in-house, but who are also supporters of the football club, or at least understand the football club and the way that we operate. And I think another one of my colleagues who's been vital probably over the past season is Dave Black, who is our business development manager, but who's also turned his hand to a bit of commentary, and he does our social media. And again, I think our social media has a different stance in it to most other people. It's personal. And it's almost like we're talking to Livingston fans through our social media. I think a lot of social media accounts are very corporate, very professional, which suits their club and what their clubs are. But for us, being over professional and being corporate doesn't suit who Livingston Football Club are. Livingston Football Club are a family club who've got a close-knit members of staff, but also a close-knit group of supporters. So our social media and our output needs to reflect that.
I think clubs don't do enough in this space really to get people on board. Like, people are willing and out there to help the club. Obviously, hopefully not revealing anything here, but I think Owen Wright is another one too that's been helping out with graphics this season, hasn't he? And like, that's somebody who you probably kind of spot his work on Twitter, and it's just bringing that into the club and trying to improve Livingston as well in that sense of things, isn't it?
No, absolutely. I'm laughing. We've probably got a unique recruitment strategy here. But Dave Black used to, in his previous work with Owen. And that's how we know Owen, because him and Dave used to work together in their previous job. But again, exactly how it came about, I'm not sure. I think we were maybe looking for a specific graphic for an occasion. And Dave says, one of the guys I used to work with does graphics. I'll give him a shout and see if he can help us out. And like everything at Livingston Football Club, it grows arms and legs. And now on a weekly basis, Owen produces all our graphics. And as you say, I'm not saying that our graphics are the best graphics you'll ever see on social media, but for us as a football club, it's another area that we've tried to improve. And I think across the board now, we at least have a set of graphics that are uniformed, whereas beforehand, we would either have no graphics and just use match footage, or we would use a different graphic every single week, where we now have the same match preview graphic, we've got the same starting 11 graphic, and we've got the same pay-per-view graphic. So I think from our point of view, it was all about just improving the club and trying to uniform the club, so that we're really trying to do a balancing act here of being professional but also being Livingston Football Club and being family orientated and being personal to our supporters. But we can still do that with the likes of Owen, who Owen has been tremendous for us. I mentioned the wall graphic earlier. We've got a mural here in the stadium now that Owen created for us. We gave him all the footage, he put the design together, and it's now up on the wall. So I think, to be fair, I think Owen's buzzing that the fact he's seen his work being used by a Premiership football club and it's up in the stadium in a Premiership stadium. But for us, Owen's been massive for us, just as Blair has and as Bruni has. And as Dave Black has, they've all been massive, and they all come with a common theme. Is I think they just kind of understand where we're coming from as a football club and how we need to do things to appeal to our supporters.
What's next off the pitch for you then, Derek?
I guess I'm not revealing any massive things here, but I'm currently overseeing the migration from one Ticketmaster system to a newer Ticketmaster system. So we're currently in the process of upgrading our Ticketmaster systems, which comes with a nice fancy new website, which will hopefully be more accessible for supporters and be easier to navigate than the other ones. So that's probably the big job over the next 2 months for myself. So we were with Ticketmaster originally, but we're kind of moving to one of their newer systems. It's got more features and, as I say, is a little bit more upgraded than the one that we were currently on. There's other bits and bobs. I probably don't want to say too much because they're not official yet, but there's other bits and bobs that we're hoping to introduce and reintroduce, because I think one thing that happened when we got relegated to League One is we had to strip everything back. So supporters' experience of the stadium, things that we'd done off the park, everything got stripped back. So we're kind of going through the process just now of trying to reintroduce some things that people have maybe missed and things that we've maybe been criticised for removing in the first place, because we now feel that we're in a place to do that. But for me personally, the big one's going to be the overseeing of the new Ticketmaster operating system.
And with, you know, Nicola Sturgeon gave an update the day before we recorded this, and the encouragement that it looks like fans will be back next season. Is there anything that you guys have been talking about at Livingston that you might do to try and do differently, perhaps, to attract more fans to the Tony Macaroni Arena?
Yeah, I think there'll certainly be a want for it. I think, you know, I actually listened to Stephen Ferguson's podcast, and he was talking about he's a bit worried whether people will be as willing to come back to the stadium. But I do think there'll be an opportunity for trying to get people back out. And people's habits have changed, but football's not changed, let's be honest. And as Chris touched on earlier, watching it on a stream isn't great, let's be honest. So hopefully, I'm actually hoping some people have watched it on the stream and thought, right, okay, let's go and try it at the stadium now. So as it stands, we've got little bits and bobs in the work just to try and mark the occasion, the supporters coming back and improving it, and hopefully they come to fruition out the next couple of months, and by the time the season goes, we'll have bits and bobs to improve the fans' experiences when they do get back, because I think there will be an appetite for it, and I think there'll be an appetite to try and grow supporter bases a little bit.
Yeah, fingers crossed, definitely for that. Derek, finish us up with we've got a couple of questions left, but plenty to discuss and plenty has been discussed on the podcast so far, but have you got any advice for any others who want to work at clubs who are working at clubs at the moment?
I think for me, and this will go for both who are working at clubs and or wanting to, is don't pigeonhole yourself into a department. And I think that's what's been massive for me, you know. Started off as sport liaison officer, started doing media, started doing ticketing, doing club secretary. And I think that's massive. And I think in football, especially Scottish football, some clubs, you know, like Livingston, can't afford for people in all these single departments. So you need to be versatile. And I think that's the most important piece of advice that I can give to people is be versatile, be willing to try things. You know, I shared a Simon Sinek video on Twitter and LinkedIn, which was giving people advice of being the idiot, which I've felt I am in some certain situations because I've had to ask loads of questions, and that's his advice. Ask questions, because all too often people are happy to just agree, because if they don't agree, they'll look silly or they'll look like they don't know what they're doing. Whereas I've done the opposite, you know. I've been involved and I've spoke to some high-level people and I've asked them loads and loads of questions, because if I don't ask them any questions and I pretend I know what I'm doing, at one point in time, they're going to think I know what I'm doing and I'm going to get thrown into a situation where I don't have a clue. So probably two pieces of advice for me is be versatile, because Scottish football needs that, and I think you need to be able to do more than just one role. And also ask questions, you know. It's the only way you're ever going to learn, and I think I've learned as much as what I have so far because I've asked that many questions and pestered that many people.
What question then would you ask of Scottish football? What would you change about it given the opportunity?
Oh, I don't know if I've got enough time on this podcast. Nah, in all seriousness, there's two things. There's one thing from a media perspective, and we got pulled up on this. There was a mistake that we done at the weekend whereby we released club-owned footage before the embargo. But that is one thing that I would change. I've openly said that to the SPFL, so I'm no revealing any mad secrets here. But I think clubs should be able to post their own footage on the day of the game. I think we accidentally done it at the weekend and is one of our most interacted match day tweets. So I totally get the broadcaster footage being held back, but I think clubs who are paying for somebody to film it and edit it should be able to use it on match day. And I think this one, you know, I'm going to be a wee bit boring. I heard, you know, I'm not going to get into the Colts debate or anything big like that. But for me, I think there needs to be an introduction of, whether it's the Scottish FA or whether it's the SPFL, club relationship managers. This is something over the past couple of weeks that I've been amazed that there isn't. And by club relationship managers, I mean somebody who works for the governing bodies, who looks after clubs, you know, who's a friendly face, who you can go to. Because for me, the only way that we improve things is if you've got a relationship manager, you build up, for want of a better word, a relationship with them. With a relationship comes trust. With trust breeds loyalty. You know, for me, it's really, really simple. And I think if we have that as clubs, if we have somebody who's looking after us, who we can go to for advice, who comes out, has some club visits, speak to us about what we'd like to improve. And I think that that would really, really improve the trust that is, I think, missing in Scottish football. And I think that would be massive. You know, sounds daft, but for example, at Ticketmaster, we've got an account manager who looks after us, and I can pester the life out of her if there's stuff I don't know because I've got a relationship with her. You know, and I think for Scottish football, that's massively important. So while it might not be, you know, one of the big massive hot topics, I think the introduction of somebody like a relationship manager, a club relationship manager that, that clubs can go to, who can trust. And as I says, again, it sounds a bit airy-fairy, but for me, trust, if you trust somebody, it breeds loyalty. And I think that's something that we need a little bit more of in Scottish football.
I think just on that, Derek, I know speaking to Danny Bisland at our end from Scottish FA, who he does a lot with clubs and stuff like that, is that anybody listening within Scottish football at any level that needs advice, is he'd probably reach out to Danny Bisland first. But yeah, look, as a governing body, I'm sure I'm not speaking out of turn. We probably would like to do more as that sort of centralised club account management area, but there's certainly help available from us for anybody for anything or advice, or we'll put you in touch with the right people. So I would encourage people to do that, but I completely get what I hear what you're saying.
And my CV is ready and waiting if anybody wants to hire me to do that job in Scottish football. That'd be lovely. Thank
Chris,
you.
That was me just trying to create a new job for myself in a year or two.
Sorry, Derek. You can have it if you want. That's fine.
Oh, you'll need multiple people.
Cool. Well, that finishes us up there. Derek, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us. I really got a lot out of that, and hopefully those listening did too. And it was great to hear more about Livy and what you're doing.
No, thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers. Well, we'll see you next time, and we'll be back soon.